Patients don't really know what's going on during the procedure, but they do remember how you greeted them, and they sure as heck remember how you left them.
Hello, welcome to episode 7 of the Dental Head Start podcast. This is part 2 with Dr. Jamie Workman. I'm pretty excited to share this with you. I alluded to this last time, but I learned a lot from his discussion about pediatric dentistry and communication, and it genuinely did change some of the things I do and in my processes when working with kids. It gave me a little bit more interest in the area and a little bit more of a spark and passion to get back into, or to focus more on that, to help those patients that we can influence for their whole life of dentistry. It's so important. So there's a lot of tips. There's a really cool story in this one from Jamie, and he really tells it well. It's quite captivating. We also cover a fair bit about communication, NLP, some stuff that I didn't really know about that, which is cool. So I hope you enjoyed part 1 with Dr. Jamie Workman, and this is part 2. Let's get straight into it. So let's get off personal development. So you do a few other things, and you do the AAFDA training as well.
Yep.
Tell us a bit about the facial aesthetics and injectables.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've been down that road for a couple of years now. I absolutely love it. Like, you know, one of the things I would say to people is experience a range of procedures and a breadth of different things, and then find something that you have that real passion for, because then you can begin to develop like more excellence in a particular area. You become known for a particular thing, so that helps to generate, you know, more leads and more patients. Oh, you need to see this person because he does this. It's been amazing. One of the things I love about it is that you know when you say to a patient, oh, you know, so and so, you've cracked a tooth and you're going to need a crown, you're like, the patient's, you know, how much is a crown? $1,500.
It's a grudge, right? But yeah.
And then, but when it comes to facial aesthetics, it's like, yeah, so if we Botox 3 areas, that'll be $500. And they're like, yeah, okay, can we do it today? They're very, very motivated. And I end up like turning down treatment. Like, can I get another mil of lip filler? No, because you're going beyond the phi ratios, the golden proportions, and and actually explaining that to them. It's just great, and the team is awesome, and I love it. Yeah,
I like that you have some integrity with that, and don't let them go too far.
Well, I try, but honestly, some of them, I swear, they'll just go down the road to someone else and get that done.
Yeah, they've got two people at the same time, yeah. and you both think you're only doing the normal.
Like, wow, yeah. Your lips really plumped up with that 1 mil. 3 mils later, laser clinic. But yes, so
how long have you been training with that?
2-3 years now. I was just going to say that one of the things I love is it's very complementary to dentistry. So, you know, whenever I have somebody in there between the age of sort of 30 and 70, then there is a potential upsell of Botox, filler, skincare, like all of those things. And I'm really passionate about it, so it shows. And just being able to have those conversations and, you know, see people come back and they're just glowing. And it gives them a real sense of, in the same way that you perform some really nice cosmetic dentistry, you know, veneers or Invisalign or something, and the person is just brimming with confidence. And that is, yeah, it's amazing. Although working on the outside of the face, the first time you sort of do it, it's a little bit like nerve-wracking. You can't hide that old composite up the back on an upper 7. It is a world to see, you know.
Yeah, you've got probably patients that have relatively high expectations as well. How do you deal with those kinds of patients and situations?
You learn to sort of, as you do with dentistry, over time you develop a sixth sense for somebody who is being unrealistic. Case in point, a patient this week brought in about 20 photographs of how they wanted to look. And I said to this person, I said, when were these taken? And they were like 15 years ago. And I was like, all right then. So we're not, I think sometimes people just don't know what can be achieved. We can make somebody look the best version of themselves now, but we don't have, you know, there's so many changes that occur in an aging face that it's, even though you can restore lost volume, you can lift things, you can, you know, soften lines, you're not going to sort of change them 100%. They will just look really nice and healthy and fresh and rejuvenated with such treatment. So it's about making sure that the person is aligned. And if you get that little voice in your head which says this person is expecting X, Y, and Z, then yeah.
Trust your instinct. That's so true for every dental or facial aesthetics patient. There's no doubt.
Absolutely.
I think we all learn that the hard way, at least once.
We do.
So you're quite passionate about facial aesthetics in that 30 to 70 range, but you're also really passionate about treating kids.
I am. Yeah. I kind of like the, I would say families is my sort of target demographic. And so, you know, mums tend to put all their energy into the kids. And then I like to be able to sort of help them make, you know, feel fresh and happy about themselves. And then also just, yeah, treating kids is, I'm a pretty enthusiastic person. I've had a few patients come in and be like, you're weirdly happy for a dentist. And and I think that can be strange to adults, but to kids, it works really well. I'm pretty proud actually of how I treat kids. I mean, I had one today, was my last patient, and this little girl, she wouldn't even sit in the chair about 3 months ago. And we did two fillings today without anesthetic, and she was bouncing out the door. There are so many little pieces that go into, I've actually broken this down, and maybe we can sort of touch on a few of these things, because I do think genuinely, I am not a crown and bridge type of guy either. But for a general dentist, I think that my skills with kids and communication are pretty decent.
I think that's something that graduates really need to get a handle on pretty early, because you often end up seeing a lot of kids early on as well. A lot of dentists decide as they get on that they prefer not to. And I must admit, treating kids for me, it's a bit of a love-hate relationship. I really, one of the best feelings you can get in dentistry is turning that kid who won't sit in the chair to someone who's just happy to come and see you and looks forward to seeing Dave the dentist. It's just, that's magic.
You should do a website.
But at the same time, I'll see if I can buy it tonight also. But at the same time, a difficult situation, a difficult child is a real challenge. It's emotionally, mentally difficult. And there's so, like you said, there's so many little things that go into that. I could do 20 out of 21 things right, and that one thing could set a kid off. So tell us a bit about that breakdown of your style or how you communicate and what's important.
All right. Well, shall I tell you I'll tell you a story, and I think that it will encompass a number of different things. I had a phone call. We got an emergency patient a few years ago, and this it was a little girl, had a toothache, and she'd never been to the dentist before. And as we know, toothache, first dental appointment, it's the nightmare scenario.
Good start. Yeah.
You've got no rapport, you've got no opportunity to, you've got to do something. And so anyway she comes in, beautiful little thing, about 8 years old. And I always start with a compliment of some sort. I like a compliment. So, wow, you're so pretty. I love your dress, and and it matches your shoes. It's lovely. And I say, so I'm Jamie. Do you want to jump up here for a second? I'm Dr. Jamie, and I am a doctor of teeth. I try to, in case they've heard, like, they've got negative associations to anything. They've heard the dentist is a scary place, but the doctor makes you better. Language is so, so critical in all Absolutely. Of these sort of interactions. So, you know, if the mother is saying, for example, you know, don't be scared. We don't process negatives. The child is thinking, why would I be scared? There must be something to be scared about.
They're on high alert as soon as the mother says that.
Absolutely.
And that's all they've ever heard.
Or be brave. It's presupposing that there's going to be something that's an issue. So you need to be like super, super conscious of your energy and the parent's energy. And don't be afraid to sort of say to the parent, like, you know, is there anyone else that can bring your child? As the fact that you are just sitting in the corner sort of quaking with nerves. so this little girl, anyway, she comes in and she sits in the chair. She was quite a confident little thing. And I said, now, my friend at the front, Sheena, she tells me that you have a sore tooth. And she's like, yes, I have a sore tooth. And I was like, can you tell me when it hurts? And she's like, it hurts when I bite, and it hurts, and it hurts when I press it. And I said to her, look, I'm so sorry. You know, I hope that we can make it better today. Can I have a little look? Will you point it out to me? So she points it out to me, and, you know, I ask a few questions to the mum, but really I'm giving 110% attention to that child. Like, someone once said to me, and I think it's just such an amazing and profound, like, quote, it was a mother who was actually, the kid was in the chair, and the kid had a pencil, and he said, look, mummy, a red pencil. And she was like, oh my gosh, that's the most beautiful red pencil I've ever seen. And she turned to me and she said, Jamie, to you and I, that's just a red pencil. But to that kid at that point in time, that is everything in their world. And I thought that was like, wow, powerful. So I say to this little girl, like, look, I can only see the top part of your tooth, but your tooth actually has a heart, and it has like some bits underneath. So can we take a little picture? And she's like, sure. All the time you're trying to build teamwork. It's never I'm treating you. It's that, you know, we're a team.
We're working together.
We're working together, and we're going to do this. So we take a little picture, and I put it up on the light box. That shows you how old I am.
Yeah. What's a light box? Can you just explain?
So if you've taken an old style X-ray, it just shines light through the X-ray. So, yeah.
I just use a file document on the computer and put the OPG up there. But yeah, okay, yeah. Go on.
this was 4 years ago or 5 years ago. And now I'm pleased to say I do have digital radiography. But we pop it up anyway, and I just have this like, oh. She's like, what's wrong? And I said, your tooth isn't very well. And she said, oh, what's wrong? And I said, well, the heart of your tooth has been affected. And she said, well, what do you mean? I said, your tooth isn't alive anymore. And this little girl goes, oh, so my tooth's dead. And I nodded, and I just waited. And she said, what are we going to do? I said, well, do you want a dead tooth in your mouth? And she said, no, can we take it out? And at this point, I'm going, Jamie, you are a genius. I don't even know where this had come from. And I kind of just gave the mum like this little wry kind of smile, like, yeah. I got this. Anyway, so I explained what I was going to do beforehand. I find it's very important to do that. So if I'm doing let's say that I plan to do a filling on a child at the next appointment, I will put the topical on their gum so they experience the topical. And I will take them through the exact process of what I'm going to do next time, but not give them the injection. So say, for example, so I'm going to put the topical, I'm going to put this special cream on, and then I'm going to ask you to take a big breath in for me. And then I'm going to ask you to take a big breath out. And whilst you're doing that, you need to be wiggling your toes. I'm going to be wiggling your lip. All these things are going on. And we go through that process. So there is no difference when they come in and actually have it done. One thing I will say is that if you give the anesthetic when they let the breath out, it's so much better than doing it when they've taken a deep breath in. It's the moment they start letting the breath out, that's when you wobble the lip and give it, because they're fully relaxed and they're focusing on breathing out and they hardly ever feel it.
That's an excellent tip. I've never heard that before. And it makes a lot of sense. When we breathe in at the top of the peak breath in, we're actually quite tense.
You're tense.
And then we relax.
You relax. And so, you know, you're doing the classic thing. So you've warmed the local so that it's similar to body temperature. You're dispensing it very, very slowly so that they don't feel the distension in the tissue. But one of the most important things that I would recommend doing is I always say, like, it's really hard to, when they've reacted, to get them back. And as we've just said, we can lose a kid on almost at any time for any reason. So I will say to them, I said, look, now sometimes when your tooth is going sleepy, it can feel really, really cold, like super cold, almost like a pinch. Because I need to know that if they feel the needle, then I can say, oh, there's that pinch. And they can accept pinch in their model of the world, but they can't accept needle, sting, or anything. And the amount of times I've just been able to go, oh, that's it. It's really cold. I know it's really, really cold. I know it's pinching. Oh, it's, and then, and now you'll start to feel it going to sleep and la, la, la. And I used to lose a lot of kids at that point when they'd feel anything, but now I don't. Because I've already told them what it's going to be.
That is the most valuable set of tips I could imagine. Like I said, treating kids for me is a love-hate relationship, but that is just amazing. That is gold. Thank you for sharing that.
No problem.
And that story, I was actually quite captivated. I was like, what is he going to do next?
I haven't finished the story, if you want me.
Yeah, go on. Yeah, okay.
So anyway, you give the anesthetic. Another great tip, sorry, they're just flowing, is ask the child how it feels to them, because we describe it in adult language. But if you ask a child how it feels, they'll say things like, oh, it feels spotty. And we might say tingly, but they don't understand tingly. So when you build up a vocab of different words, and then what I'll do is I'll reel them all off. It can feel spotty, tingly, pins and needles, like da, 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 da. You reel them all off and they'll resonate with some of them. And then that allows them to understand what's supposed to be happening. And I always say, I know it's strange. I know it's weird, but it's normal. Those are words that I just use again and again and again. Like, so you never say it's painful. It's not painful, but they can cope with not knowing what's happening as long as you have the confidence to say, this is normal. I know it feels strange. I know it feels weird. And like your lip is a big balloon, but it's normal. That's exactly how it's supposed to feel because it's fast asleep, you know, that sort of thing. Anyway, I digress. I'll finish the story really quickly. So we take the tooth out. The girl's super happy. She's like, and I said, I'm so pleased that we were able to remove that you don't have to leave here with a dead tooth. She's like, so am I. And she bounced into the waiting room and the mother looked at me with, you know, that moment when you've really gone. And she just said, thank you. And I said, it's my pleasure. And I turned to my nurse with this wry little smile and I went, and that is how you treat children. Now, 2 weeks later, exact same scenario with a little boy. He sits in my chair. I go through the same process. But this time when I make the little like, oh, you know, he's like, what's wrong? I said, look, you see that? That's the heart of the tooth. And your tooth isn't alive anymore. And this kid goes, what? My tooth's dead.
Oh, no.
Burst into tears and he became hysterical and the mother's like, what are you doing? She's like really angry with me and I completely lost the kid. And as the mum was leaving, she said, why would you ever tell a child that his tooth is dead? And I said, because believe it or not, this worked an absolute treat 2 weeks ago. And then sort of sighed and left. And then I looked again at my nurse, and my nurse goes, that is how you don't treat children. And so I think the moral of the story is you need to be very sort of aware of there is no one-size-fits-all approach, and that if you read the signs, the one girl was super confident. She was leading the conversation. The other little boy was much more timid. There were things that, you know, I needed to adapt. And so you need to remain aware of that everyone's going to have, you know, different words that they have associations to, and different things that they are worried about. And so, yeah, just being super, super aware so you can try and navigate that minefield.
I think with communication, it's very true. Everyone's different. Everyone wants something different, adults or kids. And it is up to us to try to understand as best we can. How do you, like with kids, I guess you can kind of grasp their personality fairly. I don't know, they're either confident or they're not. They usually show that pretty quickly in the start of the appointment. Do you have any tips for identifying that with adults?
I find adults much harder, because if a kid is, they're seeing you for the first time, you've got a blank slate. You do the things correctly, and most of the time that kid will grow up loving the dentist, or at least not having a fear of it. But with the adult, you're backtracking. It's already ingrained that the dentist is a terrible place, and you've got so many more filters that you're trying to navigate that I genuinely, you just do the best that you can. You just be the most caring, most empathetic. You take all of those same, I give anesthetic the same to everybody, because who wants to feel it? I will even swap, don't tell my boss, I will even swap needles sometimes, because it blunts it as it goes through the tissue. So if you give, if I'm giving two injections to a kid, I've got a fresh needle for each one. And it's like that when a dentist told me that in America and I tried it, I was like, holy moly. I knew they always felt the second one, but I actually didn't know why.
If you give a couple, it's amazing. I've only noticed that recently, how you do notice that it takes more pressure to penetrate the tissue, so it must be more sore. So that's an excellent tip.
So yeah, that was when a dentist told me that, I was, it just changed the way, especially with kids, because now I feel that they're not going to feel anything.
So how do you learn a lot about this with kids?
Trial and error, as with most things, and then just speaking to people and picking tips up, and then, you know, some things work, some things don't. But I genuinely think that if you have a true empathy and caring nature for your patient, and you know they can feel that, like it's as good as it's going to get. I mean, I had a patient last week, and afterwards she was super, super nervous, and I was doing a crown prep on a 3.7, and she had a 3.8, which always makes it more fun. And it was a horrible, horrible, horrible appointment from start to finish. Like and afterwards she said, Jamie, that was the worst experience of my entire life. And I really wanted to say to her, yeah, well, I bloody didn't enjoy it either. But instead I came out with, well, all I can say is you must have had a pretty good life. And I think that you've just got to do your best. And the reality is, if that person was to see any other dentist, it would be exactly the same. So you can't beat yourself up about it. You just got to do the best that you can for that patient and understand that you are fighting an uphill battle from the start.
That's right. I often say to my patients that I say I'm not delusional. I do realize we're still doing dentistry. I'm trying to make this as comfortable as possible. And in some situations, it is a hell of a challenge for the patients. And as long as we recognize that, at least we have the empathy to, you know, to move through it with them, I would think.
Exactly. The bit that is not nice for them in addition to the dentistry is when we're like huffing and puffing and getting angry with them. Can you open? Because you can't do your job. And yes, it's frustrating, but you just as best as possible need to maintain that like caring, calm demeanor, and try and put yourself in their shoes as really not wanting to be there and how you'd like to be treated.
Yeah, that's so true. Dentistry, yeah, it can be stressful for us. It can be stressful for other staff as well. And something I learned really early on is you've got to be able to manage your anxiety or your frustration in front of the patient for the patient's sake.
Yes.
Or same for your staff. They need to be able to manage that. It's a big part of what staff that are good and staff that may struggle in the dental surgery.
Absolutely. And another thing which I think just to add to that, which I'm sure you've realized as well, is patients don't really know what's going on during the procedure, but they do remember how you greeted them, and they sure as heck remember how you left them. So even if you've had a horrifically bad appointment, to sit them up at the end and say, come on around here, I'm just going to show you a photo of what we've done today. Can I just say how well you did? Because that was genuinely very, very challenging. And thank you for sort of bearing with me, because it was not easy with the tongue and saliva and things. And you did super, super well. So next appointment should be a walk in the park in comparison. And I just wanted to say, you know, thank you for being such a good patient. Even if they've been the worst patient, they still want to come back to you by just ending it on a positive note. And they half forget the fact that, you know, it's taken an hour and a half to do something that should have taken 10 minutes.
Exactly. Especially as a new graduate, when it will literally happen just like
it happened
a couple of times a week. Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that having that final, especially in a difficult, particularly in a difficult case, having that final statement where you reassure the patient they did really well and, you know, we've got the job done and I know that was difficult for you, and empathy and those things, it really resonates with the patients. And I think that makes or helps them possibly come back
when
they may not have otherwise done that.
Yeah. I mean, I remember taking a tooth out on a child. I think he was about 5. And even though I knew it was numb and like he just couldn't process what I was doing. And he was in tears. He was like blubbering. And I could have easily just put the forceps down, written my notes, and that's it, done. But I sat in front of this kid and I looked him in the eye and I said, I forget his name, we'll call him Tommy. And I said, Tommy, look at me. And he wouldn't look at me. Tommy, will you please look at me? Tommy, look at me. Tommy. And eventually I got his gaze and I said, now, what just happened? Okay. You had all these funny feelings going on. And I know how weird and strange that must have seemed, but I'm very, very proud of you and you did amazing. And I said, thank you for being such a wonderful patient. And I look forward to like seeing you again. And everything that we now do is going to seem so easy, because that was such a strange thing to go through, wasn't it? And like, so I've kept the language really positive, but the fact that he's now communicating with me, I went out and I wrote on a piece of paper, Dr. Jamie's patient of the day, Tommy, whatever. And I just gave it to him. And no joke, within like 2 minutes, he's racing around the waiting room, biggest smile on his face. And I know that if I'd left it, he would have had this fear of dentists potentially for the rest of his life. But that final bit is what he will remember.
Yeah, that's such an excellent story. And there's so much to learn from that. How we leave those kids in that situation, like, you know, potentially having a fear of the dentist for the rest of their life, or getting through it and then coming back and having a positive experience next time, is making so much more change for a person and their dental health than just that one filling that you do, or just this or that. Like that is really something that's making long-term change. And that's, you've inspired me a little bit to, I'm hearing every one of your tips and they're coming through, and yeah, that's really awesome. Do you have any other, like just off the top of your head, anything else for kids? Because I know the people who are listening to this, a lot of us struggle with kids, and particularly if we don't have any relationships like younger siblings or cousins or anything like that as well. I found that hard. I've now got a baby, but that doesn't really help. She's just getting her first tooth, so I'm about to learn. Any other tips you can think of that you could share with us?
Yeah, so like you just got to put yourself in the kid's shoes, and then it sort of starts to fall into place. One of the things that I do is I go on Spotify and I find a kid's song. Sounds stupid, but I would go and put like The Wiggles on or something that would just make them feel more comfortable rather than whatever music I want to listen to. I mean, modeling is really important. If you've got, other family members who are really good patients, modeling works both ways. If they're terrified of the dentist, then it is not sensible to have them in the same room. But if, you know, the sister or the brother is really good, that can be a very positive thing. What you just said a moment ago is just a really critical point. And so when someone, let's say a kid comes in and he doesn't want to sit in the chair, I would just, whatever I need to do, I will make that a fun experience for him. If I don't even get to look in his mouth, it's going to be a fun experience. And then I'll say to the mum, I'll say, "Mum, I want to see him next week, 5 minutes." Like, and then he'll just pop in and I'll say, "Just jump in the chair, high five, how you doing?" And he just gets to know me. And he gets to, you know, and then we might progress to, "Oh, let's brush your teeth with your own toothbrush." And then we brush teeth with, you know, my toothbrush. Calling, yep. Having names for all of you. I mean, I'm sure they do this, but whatever you, when you're learning in dental school about like, pediatric dentistry, calling things various, you know, this is welcome to my spaceship. It's super cool, yeah. Or whatever it is. And having names for everything, particularly I like, this is my fast toothbrush and it spins so fast that it sprays water. Okay, and it makes a big whirring noise and that helps to clean your tooth. And then I have a slow toothbrush and this one wobbles like so much. It's like lots of little spoons that are just scooping out all the bugs or whatever it is, but in language again that they can sort of, comprehend. So you'll just develop a little bit of a repertoire of what works, I guess.
That's beautiful language that you use, and I think that is so important. And I think you said, what you learn at uni. I must admit, I didn't learn much of that kind of thing at all. I worked with a really good general dentist who worked in his first couple of years in pediatrics in a dental hospital, and he's just private practitioner treating families and general dentistry. And my whole routine is basically modeled around his routine and the way he would, show, like he would, and what I do, start talking to the child and they're in the chair. I'd hand them the mirror and get them to hold it, ask them, "Do you know what that is?" And have a look at the mirror, have a look at yourself. And then while they're holding the mirror with their thumb, I would use my tooth counter or my, I'd scratch their thumbnail and then ask them, "Is that ticklish?"
Yeah.
And then they just either laugh and say yes or laugh and say no. And I'd say, "Are your teeth ticklish?" And then we'd go and, start looking at the teeth. So that whole routine was something that I learned directly from Dr. Robert Target. And that helped me so much. And that's actually a big thing about Dental Head Start is to try and give those things to people who haven't had that experience. So I think a lot of what you've just said, I'm going to re-listen to this a whole bunch of times and make some notes and add to my care for my pediatric patients for sure.
That thing that you just said about, trying in on the finger first or nail. One of the things that just extrapolating that out a fraction. If I'm doing a, let's say I'm drilling into a tooth for the first time and there's no LA, what I will do is I'll almost not even touch the tooth, but I will touch it for like 0.5 seconds and I would just say, "Was that okay?" And I'd come out and I'd stop and I'd say, "Now, was that okay?" And they're like, "Yeah, like that was nothing." And I was like, "Cool." And then I would do a little bit more and then you've got their confidence. If you start drilling straight away and the water's going everywhere. So, I mean, even if I'm scaling sometimes, I will just do like one second. Was that all right? It's not even long enough for them to say no. So, and then you can just build, they then have the confidence and just saying to them, obviously like we've come a long way learning these things, but making it so that, for example, they put their hand up when, obviously, if you feel anything that's a little bit strange or uncomfortable, then just give me a little wave and give me a moment to jump out. And then you'll get into a routine with a lot of kids where you've got about 3 or 4 seconds to do a bit, then they need a break. and you just follow that pattern that works for them without it being uncomfortable. I'm really passionate about it because you just see how appreciative, don't you, parents are when you've actually managed to look after them.
I can feel your passion. It's certainly coming through. And to be honest, yeah, one of the best feelings is that child that wouldn't come and sit in the chair is now happy to have anything done. It's something special, but it definitely takes a lot of effort and work to have, you know, a process that works for you, whoever you are. Everyone's different in the way they'll do it.
Absolutely.
But you've got to work on it. It's not something that just happens, I think.
No, it really isn't. But the more, actually, I wrote 6,500 words on my website about how to treat kids. And that's on, not Jamie the Dentist, that's on drjamieworkman.com.au under children's dentistry. But it's basically things I've touched on, but laid out really nicely. Things that you can tell what you should tell the parents to say before the procedure. What you should tell them to say to their kid after the procedure, how to reinforce and positively anchor the processes, and then how we introduce, like, everything, you know, those sorts of things. So that would probably be good to have a bit of a look at if somebody is interested in, you know, just learning a little bit more about what we've talked about today.
Definitely. I actually had a little squeeze at that earlier on, and I think that's a really good resource for the parents to read. Because so many parents make that mistake of, like you said, saying, oh, be brave or don't worry. And you know, they're just setting the kid up to ask, what's wrong? What am I worried about? And then it's a downhill from there. So that's a great resource as well. Definitely everyone should check that out. So on our Dental Head Start Facebook group, we had an anonymous question. So someone would like to know a bit more about NLP and how it impacts on your patient communication.
Ah, okay, interesting. So NLP, or neuro-linguistic programming, it's basically, I'd just like to say, it's sort of advanced communication skills, understanding how best to build rapport with people. We are in a unique situation where people do not want to be in the dentist, let's face it. Even when we ourselves have done, when I have my teeth cleaned, I'm like, yeah, this is a good reminder of what I do to people every single day. Gives a bit more empathy. But being able to really build rapport quickly, because we don't have a lot of time. So just as a high level example, and I would really recommend that, you know, someone looks into it, because I've found it invaluable, not just in dentistry, but in as a total life skill. It's a foundation of, like, relationships. And there's talk about NLP being used for manipulation and, you know, to get certain outcomes. Well, yeah, I do use it. I use it to build, you know, a strong, good relationship with my patients so that they'll be happy to have treatment. It's a mutual outcome.
That's actually an admirable thing to do, because you should be telling them what you think is truly right for them and what you truly think is good for them. And so if you're not communicating it well, you're failing the patient. So it's not manipulation, it's actually helping them.
Yes, 100%. So let's just take one quick example of, like, there's something called primary rep systems. So we have sort of five senses, but there are three that we mainly sort of communicate with, or we call our primary rep system. So that might be a visual system, an auditory system, or a kinesthetic system. And they're very, very different people who process that as their primary sense. So a visual person talks incredibly quickly. I've actually spoken quite like a visual person today, but they'll come in and they'll say, you know, I just want to get this done. You know, I like the look of that Invisalign thing. So they use words such as predicates like look. They describe things in a visual capacity, etc. Mm-hmm. And if you're a kinesthetic dentist and you go, hello, oh, I like the feel of your, look at that texture on your thing, or it's got, you know, and you're speaking to them like that, which may work a treat for the little old lady who, if you met her at 100 miles an hour trying to explain a procedure, you know, you've got gum disease or you're going to lose all your teeth, unless, then, you know, you're just mismatching against these people. So being able to pick that up, being able to see that and adapt to that person and communicate with them in their style. I see so many dentists always communicating in their own style. And it's like, no, you need to recognize how this person likes to communicate, and you need to match that. And you'll find that instantly the relationships will deepen, like in seconds. It's very powerful.
That's really interesting. I'm someone who quite like personal development, all that kind of stuff, but I've never really delved into NLP at all. I know a few people who are interested in it and talk about it a fair bit, but that's profound. Like, I know it's so simple, you know, different character types. But that kind of thing really is so important. I notice, like, I'm a certain type myself, and there's a type of patient I can think of, someone who doesn't want to hear a lot. They just want to get it done, want to get out. I guess you called it the visual person, I guess. Yeah. I'm thinking of, you know, that classic, like, 60-year-old male is just kind of, and I find it hard to build rapport with that patient. And I think you've probably hit the nail on the head there. I'm going to look
you
into a little
nice
bit more
and
of that.
Softly.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm more of that kind of person. So. Yeah. Very interesting. Where do people find, like, where do you learn about NLP stuff?
I actually did a course up in Queensland. I think they're called now Emotions Academy, and they've modified. So originally they started out training NLP, and then they've just changed their approach. But it encompasses all the same skills. But you can find. I think Tad James is another prolific person in Sydney who teaches it. And then there's a couple of, I think Kinar Shah, basically with his, he does it for dentistry. So he's taken that skill. He's a master prac and he does it for dentistry. So, I mean, but it's just your life is your, everyday life is your learning in that capacity. Once you sort of know, you know, you have a bit of knowledge on which to build, then just day-to-day life, just testing it out. You're listening for somebody and then you communicate with them in a different way. And you just watch how their face changes and softens and they relate to you. And it really is for your children, for your relationships. It's having excellent communication is, for me, just one of the most important skills.
Yeah, language is something. When I was at school, I didn't have much time for English, and I wasn't very good at it. I didn't really care at all. And as I've got older, I've got more interested in reading and got more interested in language itself and language to, you know, have an impact on someone, to communicate with someone, to resonate with someone. What we say matters so much, and it's such an important skill. It's everything in life, really.
It's, I mean, when you break down the percentages of, it's what, 8% is what you say, and the majority is your physiology. Second to that is your sort of intonation and, you know, the how loud you are and all the aspects of the way that you're communicating. I mean, we know that we can say the right things to somebody. We can say, I love you. I love you. Or we can say, I love you, like I actually really love you. And same words. But, and that's why I think it's really good to develop as a dentist that skill, because if you can look into a patient's eyes and when they're saying, you know, I haven't slept last night, and you can process that and be like, you know, and you don't even need to say anything. You just need to be present with them and share the energy and understand and what have you. And they just feel accepted. And that, like, this person is actually listening to me. They're not interested in the money. They care. They're a health practitioner, you know, that sort of thing. So,
yeah, absolutely. So important. So we've been going quite a while now. Let's start to wrap it up a little bit. Tell us, if you could go back in time and speak to yourself maybe in your dental school years or just as you're about to graduate or graduated, what are the things that you would say to yourself then?
I think I would say, don't be scared. I'm quite a, I don't want to do anything wrong, and it has limited me a little bit because I haven't grown as quickly as I would if I just didn't have that fear. So don't be scared. I know that I'm always going to be, I mean, fear is there for a reason. It's telling us something. It's saying that, you know, you're at risk of this, and it's a protective mechanism. But I really wish that I would have just got stuck in more. Instead of being tentative about trying something, I would have just gone through that uncomfortability, not, you know, sensibly, not picking a ridiculously hard wisdom tooth, but going out of my way to just, you know, do a wisdom tooth instead of referring it because it was easy. Easy to send it to the oral surgeon because I was scared I might not be able to do it. Because I'll tell you what, those points when, you know, you're 2 hours into a surgical and you can't do it, they offer so much growth. And then you actually come out of that with all the stress, and you'll go back and you sort of, then you sort of, as long as you have a growth mindset, which is something that I, you know, think is so important, and you say, well, who do I know who's good at wisdom teeth? All right, I'll go and ask them how they would have approached it. We're so fortunate having resources like DPR that we have people around us. But I would have said, Jamie, don't just pick any old job, because your whole love for dentistry and career, the career of dentistry, could, you know, it rests on this first interaction that you have. It's that same child visiting the dentist for the first time. You want to have a really good positive experience. You want to be in a practice where you've got lots of patients, where you can learn from an experienced practitioner who is ethical and quality. And because that is better than any, putting yourself in a great practice is like having, you know, CPD every day. An amazing CPD. So you cannot, the environment is so utterly critical. I wish I had valued it more and thought more critically about what that would actually mean, being in that particular environment. Does that mean I go and work in, I'm going to say Wagga Wagga. That's probably an actual place in Australia, but I don't know.
Yep.
Is it? Okay. I thought I was just making that up. And because you're going to see at that point, you're going to see 15 patients a day. You're going to get a huge experience and breadth of procedures. And you get that sort of thing. Thinking wisely, you know, I want to live in this particular place, but I'm only going to see 2 patients a day. It's a balancing act.
It is.
And I think, but just weighing that up so that you make a decision that is right for you.
Yeah, everyone's different for sure. That's exactly my first piece of advice for any students, is pick your first job wisely and consider, you know, you don't have to move out of a city, but it is harder to find those busy with good breadth of procedures kind of practice in the city. So in my opinion, I am where I am 2 years out because of the practice I work in. Now, I'm in a regional center. I'm busy. I've been fully booked since day one. And it's just, it's profoundly different. So that same piece of advice for students, for sure.
And I'm 14 years out, and I'm starting to build, you know, this is building my list again, and I've probably average six patients a day.
Yep. And you're in a metro area, aren't you?
Yeah, just a suburb of Sydney, which has 17 dentists. So
yeah, so different story to where I am.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it is absolutely imperative to not just on a whim think about it carefully. Yeah.
So where does the future hold?
Who knows? And I'm kind of excited about that. I think that over the next 6 months, my associate model will be sort of fully explored and tested. And I'm really excited to see how that goes. Once I've got 4 books 3 days a week, then I don't really know. I love the developing excellence in facial aesthetics is really important to me. And then, yeah, we will see. I mean, I'd love to find myself in a position where I could help other associates that want that work-life balance like I do, and work with them to achieve that. So that's on the horizon, and we'll just see how it goes.
I can really feel your passion for that, but I really like that you're someone who's entrepreneurial, but you're not tied down by then putting that all into a practice and being, you know, stuck. So you've got this time that you can use for other things, and all these, the mouth, was it Next Guard and Jamie the Dentist and the facial aesthetics and all these other things you're doing. I think it's quite inspiring, and I don't know, I resonate a little bit with that, trying to do other things because it keeps me, I enjoy it. That's why we do it. And dentistry gives us that ability to do other things that we enjoy as well.
It does indeed. And anyone who is on the road or has just graduated, you are in an incredible profession. I wish you a wonderful and colourful journey.
Absolutely.
Dental journey, yeah.
Yeah, we're pretty lucky. So, Jamie, thank you so much for sharing so much of your time and your knowledge, particularly that stuff with children. I'm going to just get straight back into that after this. We really appreciate you spending the time with us tonight and sharing your wisdom.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and it's been a pleasure talking to you.
We'll do one on personal development sometime soon.
I'd love to do that. I promise I'll speak a bit more slowly.
Yeah, we're mismatched NLP or whatever it is.
Slightly, but you've got such a lovely, calming voice, and you didn't appear to mind, or, you know, you seemed to follow everything I was saying.
All right, take care. Thanks so
much. All right, cheers, David. Bye now.
Yeah, bye. All right, that was part two with Dr. Jamie Workman. As I've said many times, I enjoyed that conversation and learned a lot, and I really do hope you did too. He shares something from to read from his website, drjamieworkman.com.au. Go to the children's dentistry section, and there's a lot of write-up there. I guess it's aimed at the parents and people trying to understand what the kids will go through, but it's really great for us dentists to read to get a good idea of those different bits and pieces that he was talking about. Make sure you check out jamiethedentist.com. They've just done a full rebrand. It's worth checking out. It's an amazing website. Something that Jamie has done, spent a lot of time on, and he's not monetizing it. He's basically using this as a philanthropic venture, so it's pretty cool to see. This week on the Dental Head Start blog, I wrote something that I learned from Dr. Omar Ikram. Dr. Ikram runs a couple of Facebook pages that you've probably seen, Specialist Endo Crow's Nest, Clinical Hacks, and a couple of others. These are great pages to follow, and you always get good tips from Omar. The one I've shared here, he's let me share with Dental Head Start. It's pretty simple. It's when you're irrigating and you have to bend the irrigation needle, you may as well bend it to just short or 2 mils short of your working length. That allows you to very precisely irrigate and know that you're getting to the right length and you're getting the solutions down there, which is what makes the difference. The other thing I learned from Omar and share in this post is that the gauge of your irrigation needle correlates pretty directly to ISO sizes. So for instance, a 30 gauge needle is 30 ISO. So if you've prepped to 30, you should be able to get the needle to the working length or just before. And that's really important to get the irrigant down there and to decontaminate these canals. So check that out at dentalheadstart.com. And if you like what we're doing here, we'd really appreciate if you share this with someone else. If you put in your Instagram story or let someone else know that this podcast or the blog has helped you out. That's obviously the way that we grow. And if you can do that for us, we'd really appreciate it. As well as that, we really appreciate your feedback. So if you have some tips or if you want to tell us how to do this a little bit better, we would love to hear it. So be in touch, the website or on Facebook. Anyway, it's all fine. For now, thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time.